your machine off, so you can present?
Yeah, you can need to power yours down.
Just put a lid over your tab.
Okay.
Everybody ready?
Getting there.
Okay. So this is case file LU12-148087 DZN, Slabtown Flats. And we have with us our esteemed Dave Skelton as the planner in charge. So Dave, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thanks. It's a rare time when you guys see me. I haven't been before the Design Commission in, I think, 3 years, because I've been very busy on the historic side. But it's testimony to how busy we are getting that I end up getting a case with you all. And so I'm going to give you the background, and then applicants can fill in the design details more. Here's the zoning map. The site is zoned EXD. The applicable approval criteria are the community design guidelines, and then we're requesting one modification. So that's 33825040 modifications that will better meet design review requirements. Here's an aerial that shows the site, and I also put in the dotted turquoise line because you guys have been talking about the Conway property a lot, and this is directly adjacent to the east. So that's the boundary of the Conway master plan. I think I might have gotten the line at the bottom wrong by a block, but you understand where I'm trying to point you out.
Right. I think you got it right.
That's correct? Right. Okay.
Tom Pettigrew?
Yeah. So this is a series of photographs, the little key diagram up in the upper corner showing where the photograph was taken. So this is looking into the site. It's a parking lot with some volunteer ailanthus trees in the parking strip. Pretty desolate. This is looking east, southeast into the site. And then I'm going to go kind of around the site from inside the site. So this is looking at the Lucky Lab. I think this is actually the brew room that's behind this wall. That's this is in the southeast corner facing north. Now we're looking south through the, there's an opening between Lucky Lab's brew hall and their outdoor patio. And this is looking into the outdoor patio. There's a cover over part of the patio. That's the white board structure to the right. Now we're looking southwest along a party wall of a building that faces Northwest 20th. This is the area where the modification, all along this edge, where the parking stalls come against the edge there. The modification is to reduce the depth of that, of the required buffer zone from 5 to 2 feet. This is outside outside looking in, and that's the same wall that we were just looking at from the other direction in the front of the building on southwest or northwest 20th. This is from inside the site looking west across the street into Conway. Northwest, same situation, looking into Conway. North, this is the extension of Northwest 20th that I believe it's currently private property. I wasn't listening carefully about whether it's going to be opened and become public or not. That might be a consideration. This is the kind of, the site is actually really at the very edge of old development and the kind of massive paving to the west and north. So this is the other, the remnant along the other side of Northwest Raleigh. And then the proposal is two apartment buildings. Each has 20 flats, and the ground floor units open directly to the sidewalk and to interior courtyards. The exterior materials are cementitious panel, cedar board, And those are in a rain screen system. There's cement stucco white at the entries. There's painted and weathered steel, fiberglass framed windows, and aluminum storefront. There are 35 parking stalls provided. They're roughly half are under and half are out from under the rear of the building. And there are 46 long-term bike parking spaces and 2 short-term bike parking spaces. The long-term bike parking is it's all under the building. Some of it's in locker, lockups. Then there are entry courtyards, gardens, and there's a barbecue patio and garden near that opening to Lucky Lab. There's ground floor entry parking and perimeter landscaping. And then stormwater will be dealt with first to a planter and then to a dry well disposal system. The modification that's being requested, this is the purpose of, they have to meet the purpose and they have to better meet the approval criteria. So the purpose in this case of perimeter landscaping is to buffer the impacts of parking areas on pedestrians and neighboring properties. The findings support the proposal because it greatly improves on the existing conditions at the site. It starts a transition from the existing lower scale development to the east and south to the taller anticipated development that's going to be on the Conway properties. It creates a very pleasant pedestrian and resident interface along Raleigh, especially and also along the part of Northwest 20th where the residences abut. It deploys a limited palette of durable materials to create a pretty varied but well-organized facade, and it also presents a clear hierarchy of entries. The parking is very well integrated by the being partially under the building and also by the number of things that it does. That area is kind of not just a parking lot. It's storage and a little party deck and landscaping and stormwater treatment, et cetera. And then the design does effectively minimize adverse effects on neighboring properties. Then the modification, I believe, is also supportable because it satisfies the spirit of the community design guidelines better than a strictly compliant design would, because it aggregates the parking buffer areas in the parking lot into the locations where it will provide the most benefit to the neighbors. For example, where we talked about where the opening in the wall is to the neighbors. The purpose of the standards are met through the parking area being well buffered from the street and very well integrated with the functions on the site. So the parking is very well integrated with the building, the outdoor living spaces, storage, stormwater management, et cetera. As usual, the commission has the following options. You can approve with conditions, deny, or request additional information to be considered at a continued hearing, and staff is recommending approval. That's the end of my presentation. If you have any questions.
Anybody have any questions of David?
No? I would just add for everybody, I provided you with 3 additional exhibit sheets. Basically dealing with one detail and some fence design, and also the staff report, and also an email from the Northwest District Association endorsing the proposal, and a new staff report that the only difference is that it reflects those additional exhibits. Thank you.
Any questions? I have one or two. What's the allowable FAR in height?
I believe it's... Can I ask you to forbear, and I'll I'll get that out maybe after the applicants speak, or they can address it?
Unless you all know it.
3-1.
3-1.
3-1?
45-foot height.
45? Okay.
It's base zone.
Base zone. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I had. No other question? Okay.
I guess I have a Dave, question. Dave, I don't know if you, you're looking that up. Has this been reviewed by any kind of transport? Will this ultimately be reviewed by some transportation for parking?
Been reviewed by transportation. They had no objections.
And so these, like, sort of 14-foot parking spaces are fine?
Right.
Is that any kind of a new standard?
And that car hangs over the
over the landscaping.
16.6, yeah. I guess, right. Is the minimum. Okay.
Which is 16 is 16 standard, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. No other questions, then y'all can start your presentation.
Is this on? Tom DeChara, CE John Company, 1701 Southeast Columbia River Boulevard, Vancouver. I had a couple quick introductory comments, and I'll let Alan kind of get into the detail. We purchased the site from Conway last year. As you know, it's outside the Conway master plan. We were attracted to it because, you know, it is a kind of an edge site. It's on the edge of the transition area between the work, you know, everybody's been talking about the Conway master plan, but the existing fabric of Raleigh Street, which is actually a very cool little street with some existing little residential buildings before you kind of peter off into the sea of parking around it. We had a goal of trying to create more of a workforce housing product here. It's not a subsidized affordable housing product. There's no public subsidy or tax abatements or anything like that. But part of that strategy, because it's a little bit on the edge, it's not on the 23rd or 21st, we pursued this building type that Alan will speak a little bit more about, which is a kind of a walk-up style project where you've got individual entrances that serve pods of 4 or 2 units per floor. So it's somewhat similar to some of the older plexes that you'd find in the neighborhood, but in a very modern language. It's a product type that I've developed in some other places under previous employment that works pretty well for a transitional element, creates a nice street edge. There's no retail in this project, and it allows us to kind of hit a price point that's a little lower than other full podium corridor elevator served buildings with underground parking. So this was a transitional site. We saw it stepping scale up to the rest of the Conway District as the Conway District evolves, but understanding it could be out kind of on the edge there for a while. So we hired Hulse to kind of take that idea and design a refined modern building, and I'll let Alan kind of take it from there.
Alan Jones, Hulse Architecture, 110 Southeast 8th Avenue. I'll just kind of start on a massing level, and we'll work our way down to the fine-grained details. As Dave and Tom both mentioned, we do see it as a transitional project that's right adjacent to the Conway master plan, and it is an extra long block. It's a 260-foot long site. So our first reaction to it was that 260 feet's an awful long way, and our first inclination was to break it into two distinct buildings and to separate the buildings by a courtyard. And then we further broke it down into these modules that Tom just described that have 4 units on each story that are served by a single stair, a walk-up building. Why don't we just leave? We'll go through the details specifically as we go forward. You can see the Conway master plan is kind of ghosted in the SketchUp model. Our building's shown right here in the darker model. I believe this part of the neighborhood is considered it's part of the Northwest Plan District, and I think it's called the transitional zone, and it is a transitional zone, and that there's a real mixture of building types and uses. There's single family houses, there's two-story, multifamily buildings, there's the church, there's the Miles Standish building, there's one-story warehouses. We're directly adjacent to the Lucky Lab, which was the old Freightliner factory, and there's a one-story manufacturing building on this corner and a two-story residential building to the east. So in addition to looking at this, site as kind of an extra long site that we wanted to break into two pieces, we looked at it in terms of this project really being a step up from the one- and two-story buildings that are currently in this transitional zone, you know, up to the Conway buildings, which we anticipate will be four-, five-, six-story buildings. You can see it here in red. It's on the corner of Raleigh and 20th. You know, specifically the buildings I just mentioned, the Lucky Lab building, a manufacturing building, the Miles Standish building, the master plan jogging through, you know, directly to the north and to the west of the site. Go ahead, Lee.
Hi, Lee Schrader, Holst Architecture, 110 Southeast 8. I guess we started looking at kind of what the neighborhood precedents were and how maybe our project fit in with that. So we began looking at kind of, you know, the sites, and as Alan mentioned, you know, we looked at these kind of, you know, one- and two-story kind of boxes that kind of, you know, are directly adjacent to our site. We then kind of looked at similar precedents within the neighborhood, the similar kind of massing, kind of, we're kind of interested in this real simple module with these kind of recessed entries, or in these cases, I mean, these are somewhat courtyards, and thought that maybe we could develop a language kind of based on that to provide some sort of connection to the existing area.
And then also, you know, looking at buildings that were projects, these older projects that were built in pairs that had a central courtyard between them as precedent. This is the landscape plan, and the significance of this plan is, you know, showing the ground story units directly on Raleigh and then a portion of the units on 20th. And, you know, another early decision was to hide the parking behind the building and under the building to mitigate, you know, its impact on the sidewalks. So there's a faint dashed line you can see right here, which is the second and third story of the building. And as Dave mentioned, the northern parking spaces tuck under the building. The southern parking spaces are on the south side, and those are the spaces that butt up to the modification we're requesting. We also think this center courtyard is kind of a unique opportunity. You know, often we're building out entire sites, so when we had an opportunity to kind of have a courtyard through the middle, we took that as an opportunity to really get into designing specific spaces, which we'll get into. This is the architectural ground floor plan, which is very similar to the site plan. It just shows the center, you know, the four entries, one for each module. The modules are 50 feet wide, so each building's 110 feet wide. And then the parking tucked behind. Go back for a second, Lee. And just to familiarize yourself, this is a water room. These are kind of the utility spaces, electrical rooms. Bike parking is here. There's bike parking tucked in lockers at the back of the building. Dumpster enclosure. This is outdoor barbecue space and a fire table. Typical second and third story building, again, with broken down into the modules with four units being served by a single, you know, corridor and stair. The roof plan, the modules step down. The site actually has quite a bit of grade change on it. I think there's 5 feet from one corner to the next, so each of these modules steps down the site. So there's like a 9-inch step between each module, and then we've raised the northwest corner up to kind of as a corner gesture to strengthen the building on the corner. There's other moves we've made in that regard, but, you know, one of the significant ones is we've raised the parapet up on this corner by 2 feet. A section to illustrate the, you know, the four units per module on the upper floors with a tuck under parking, you know, the northern parking space is tucking under. This is the profile of the Lucky Lab building on the south. An elevation and plan to further illustrate the way that we've broken the building down into these 50-foot modules as they carry through. And then it's a little faint, but these entry niches are we've further broken the building down into 25-foot bays that are separated on each side of these entry modules. And the entry modules are actually arranged in a, it's part of the patterning of the building, which I will get into later, but in some cases, the entry niche is 2 stories tall. In other cases, it's 1 story tall, and then there's a niche on the third floor, so there's kind of a kinetic kind of interplay in the facade. And then the specific design components that we'll go through are the garden, courtyard, the building entries, ground floor patios, site art, gates and fences, the materials, the lighting, and then the detailing. So starting with this courtyard, you know, as I mentioned, it's kind of a unique opportunity to have this center courtyard, and it's 23 feet wide on the ground story, and then the second stories of the buildings actually cantilever out, so it's 20 feet between buildings, but 23 on the ground floor. And coming off the Raleigh Street sidewalk, you kind of meander through a gate, you pass through a corten, a perforated gate and fence, and then there's a paving pattern which kind of circulates back through the site and creates these kind of unique outdoor spaces with benches that are, you know, we're thinking of this as a kind of a quiet meditative garden because it's next to ground story units, as opposed to other spaces we'll show you which are a little more active. So this is in that courtyard looking north in the back. We've separated the parking area similar to the way the building's broken in down. The parking area is broken into two halves, and they're separated by this center spine courtyard that runs all the way through the parking area, and then we've placed a signature tree actually in the drive aisle. It's a large red oak. It's kind of as a focal point. It's okay. Typical entry niche, this is a two-story variety. As I mentioned, we have single-story varieties, but the entry niches are 5 feet deep, and they're meant to kind of, on a conceptual level, it's like carving into the building, and that we imagine the corridors painted a kind of a white color, and so we've taken a white stucco and a white canopy that's coming out of a dark charcoal shell. And then we have lighting, recessed lighting in the canopies, and then we're actually putting lighting on top of the canopies that'll shine up and illuminate the upper niche as well. Here's a streetscape looking down Raleigh where you can see one of the entry niches, and then you can faintly see in the background the entry niches in the one-story and three-story. And then the buildings are set back from both Raleigh and 20th by 5 feet, and then we've worked with Steve Shapiro, who's here, and he's a landscape architect, and he can specifically talk more about plants if we want to get into it, but we've developed this zone between the building and the sidewalk, and some sections, it alternates between raised concrete planters and flush planters. We have vine maples adjacent to the entries, and then also strawberry trees, and then there's dwarf grasses that are in the tree wells along the face of the building. And then also, and we can start to get into the materiality of the building in this slide. So the primary cladding material is Cerraclad, which is a cementitious product. It's actually manufactured by Panasonic. It has a long history in Japan. It's been used a few times in Portland, and we're all, you know how it comes down to the execution of the product, I think, and we're excited about it. We can show you our details. But in addition to the Cerraclad, we have Anderson Fibrex windows, which were kind of a tall vertical proportion. This proportion of the windows comes directly from looking at neighborhood precedent, some of the, you know, the kind of the industrial age, kind of Bauhaus style department buildings that, you know, and warehouses that are through the district. So, you know, that's kind of one of the languages that we looked at for the building, you know, kind of boxy proportions with vertical openings, and then we've taken kind of a modern twist on that, and that we've arranged them in, you know, a pretty random pattern for the windowing. And then between the windows, we're warming it up because we recognize that the Cerraclad is a synthetic material, so we're introducing wood between the windows to kind of further kind of work with the entry niches to kind of create this facade with this kind of kinetic interplay of materials that, you know, it kind of dance along the facade and have your eye move. We do have ground story residential units, which is a challenge. You know, particularly with FHA requirements, we're, you know, having them right on the ground floor. They are all ADA accessible. So since we're not able to raise the ground story of the building up, we've developed a system of outdoor patio areas for each of the units. And it's kind of like a kit of parts. Every unit gets the same treatment. We have a fencing screen system, which is made up of a solid section of corten steel that's 3 feet tall, you know, and that's paired with a square section of perforated panel to kind of have a, you know, a layered material. We have site cast concrete pavers that you can come in on, and then we're also doing a concrete bench outside. There is a, it's hard to see in this rendering, but I can show you in the lighting plans, we do have a sconce light outside of each unit. Another one of the ideas, we've been talking about Raleigh as the kind of the one of the central spines that will go through the Conway, site, and we've been discussing with C. John the concept of using art on the front of this building, not on the public property, on the private property, but and so we've kind of identified this corner, as a corner gesture. In addition to raising the parapet, we're planning to use what we've developed as these lanterns, and they're human scale elements, so 6 to 8 feet tall, the tallest, and then they step down in size. They pick up off the landscape screen idea that they're made of Corten steel. Our thought with the artist is to have an artist come up with a pattern that would then be laser cut, it'd be given to the fabricator, and the fabricator would then manufacture these lanterns, and they'd have lights inside of them. And these slides this is kind of faint, but they kind of illustrate, here's an example of a lantern with laser cut patterning into it. This is hard to see, but it's kind of these random laser cut swatches. We could also do more of a perforated panel that varies in pattern. But the idea is to have, these lanterns with lights on the private property that are set in specific spaces that we're hoping to, discuss with you, and going to get approval to have an artist have some liberties to develop what they do within a certain parameter. So our proposal is to have 2 or 3 lanterns on the corner, a single lantern between the buildings to mark the entry, and then another lantern down at the east side of the property to kind of mark the edge.
I add one thing to this discussion. It is our intention to contract with the local artist to commission these actual specifics pieces, and something that you'll see as we talk about Block 296 next month on the grocery store block that we're involved with is continuing this language along Raleigh Street with public art along the right-of-way, so that Raleigh becomes a bit of a spine, almost a little bit of an art walk that connects 21st and 23rd as we're developing this parcel, the grocery block, and as you may remember, we're developing the block at the corner of 23rd and Raleigh. It's under construction now, and we've got a panel next to the entryway that will also be a commissioned piece of art. So trying to engage the local artist community and kind of create this thread that goes through all the projects that we're developing on Raleigh.
Has this idea been through the value engineering process yet?
I've got a budget for the artist to work with, so that's the way we're approaching it. We've got the zone and the space. Yeah, we have been talking to the artists. And,
so
yeah.
In that regard, the artist would, their scope of work would be to come to the pattern. And right. That pattern would be given to the contractor, and the contractor would then use a fabricator to fabricate. Right. So it's not as if it's a hand-built piece of expensive art. The idea is that it's the artist comes up with a pattern that gets implemented on a more cost-effective.
And the shape of that may change a little bit. We wanted to show you zonally the size and working with Dave about how we could approve it now but not have the actual detail of it. But let's give the artist some latitude to be expressive with it and make it a cool piece of artwork on there. So it may not look just like that, but it's going to be in that general configuration.
Yeah, I'm fine with the whole. I'm just getting from this to the plasma cut holes or drilled or punched. Yeah. It could break down, and I don't want you to be promising something that you get the first cost, and it's like, oh boy,
I
and then be locked into this.
It's a challenge. I mean, we've done it on other projects.
Okay.
Where we've laser cut steel, and we've been through that process. It does get expensive, but we
especially when it's intricate. And
then we have Matt with our consultant who's going to kind of set us up with an artist. We've talked about budget, and she's got some good ideas for it. And I think we'd like to just have we'd submit it back to Dave when we have something more refined. To kind of bless for consistency with the application.
So in this period of time, should we get through this and then circle back to
That's great.
Okay, keep going. Yeah. We're giving Andy a lot of leeway today because it's his last day.
Again,
comments from the last day.
They don't even care.
This slide shows, again, the landscape plan, but what we're specifically showing here are 4 distinct areas where we are including screens or fences. So and I'll show you perspectives of those. But this slide is the entry piece to the courtyard. We also have a piece that we call the south fence that is fills the gap between the Lucky Lab and the manufacturing building. And then we have a screen along the east property line as well as vehicular gate.
Just want to flip back there just for a second.
Go ahead.
I want to point one thing out that we didn't talk about. Dave showed the pictures of the Lucky Lab loading docks that are happen to be right on the property line on this site, which is right pretty unusual. And part of while we were designing the building was to accommodate occasional deliveries to the back if he has to replace his tanks and so forth like that. There's no easement or anything like that. But part of the gesture of keeping the building not hard up to the back was to kind of preserve that, give some airspace, and allow that building to still function long term. He'll have to, you know, reconfigure some things inside his building, but it's just one of the unusual characteristics of the site.
So one of those components is the vehicular gate, which we have actually Core 10 cladding that are on the west side of both the trash enclosure and the water room. And between those two is a perforated piece of gate that's a hinged gate that is a motorized gate that works on a key fob or a fob for the residents. A little dark in this room, but between the courtyard, the courtyard entry, there's a...
If you know what exhibit number it is, that would help us. We can always look.
They're all really dark. Page.
Well, that's better.
That's a little better.
That works. Yeah. So at the courtyard entry, we have a 5-foot tall perforated fence panel that's 50% open because it's within a certain distance of the sidewalk. And then we have a taller 8-foot by 8-foot square. The entry gate's actually around the side here. We do see these gates as kind of backdrops with grasses and flax planted in front of them that'll grow tall. And so they'll really just be a backdrop. Don't have sexy renderings of the south fence or the east fence, but the south fence is a solid Core 10, sheet steel fence that's 8 feet tall, and then it steps in modules across the opening. Along the east side, we're doing a tube steel frame with a welded wire fabric mesh in it that's intended to grow vines on it.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Yeah.
It turns out that the Exhibit 49 that we handed out does not have the east fence on it, so we're going to need to substitute that.
It's on another page.
Okay. Okay. Just want to make sure that we're not.
It's already in the packet.
Okay, got it. Sorry for the interruption.
No problem. The material palette for the project, we have samples that we brought in that are over here by the windows, but as I mentioned, the primary material is the Cerakladd. In this case, it's called the cast stripe. It's a pattern of Cerakladd, which has been used in town on this residential building, which is in Southwest Portland, just west of the Mac Club, for their new rebuild on their entry. They're actually using it horizontally. We're proposing to use it vertically. Concrete, we do have exposed concrete. The tongue and groove cedar between the windows, the perforated Core 10 steel, which we brought samples of, the Anderson Fibrex composite windows, which are, we understand, 60% recycled content. And here's just a photo of how we envision using the Core 10 and how that will look with lights on it. This is the lighting plan, and as we click through, there'll be different lights that come on in different locations. You can see the little, in this case, green dots that point to the entry niches, so we have recessed down lights at each of the four entry niches and at the entry niches on the south side as well as underneath the second story above the parking. Recessed up lights we're using on top of the canopies as they shine up in those niches. A wall sconce that gets used outside of each of the residential doors to their patio space. Pole lights, we're proposing four pole lights along the property line. Landscape lights, we're backlighting the perforated screens along Raleigh, And then the feature trees in the center courtyard, as well as the signature tree in the center and the screen along this side, have landscape lighting on them. And then the last type of lighting is just bollard lighting to provide kind of an ambient light to the barbecue area and in the center courtyard. The landscape plan, which I know the basics of, I can tell you what the trees are. If you have specific questions about the plants, I think Steve can come up. But we're proposing honey locust street trees, currently in discussion with the urban forester about those. In the center courtyard, there are Chinese dogwoods. We have horn beams along the east property line and on the islands. The signature tree is a red oak. And then pairing each entry is a vine maple and a strawberry tree. Here's an enlargement of that center courtyard. I've kind of discussed most of this, but what's new here is just to show you that we're using two different colors of concrete. It's all just cast-in-place concrete, but we're dyeing it and then acid-etching the concrete to give it a special treatment through the center zone. And then the upper plan here is just a kind of a vignette plan showing the space for each of the residential units with their, you know, their pavers out front with their screen wall. And then this is the barbecue fire table, which is, again, pavers. This is the barbecue. There's a fire table. And then it's nicely landscaped all the way around. An exhibit with the plantings. We can come back to that if you'd like. We've provided a lot of details here because we know that there's some sensitivity around Cerakladd. You know, we do think it's a very clean material that can be used well, and we've spent a lot of time detailing it. Specifically, we know that the flashing and the caulking need to be executed well. We've spent a lot of time at all the terminations at the bottoms of all the panels. We have reveals and what we're calling kind of closure skirts, which prevent you from looking up into the rain screen. All of the, you know, the noses of the flashing pans and the lids will all have a hemmed edge with a very small drip on it. You know, the drips at the bottom of the cantilevers will have this, you know, dimension on it, which closely matches the preformed corner of the Cerakladd as it turns the corner. Again, there's, you know, reveals shown. It's one of the elements that were shown on the facade is these 2.5-inch reveals, which you can see right here, which kind of break the building horizontally and emphasize the cantilever. Go ahead, Lee. You know, enlargements of each of those details. This is our reveal detail. There's the nose detail. That's hard to read, but this is a flush panel detail between, you know, instead of a standing seam, we're using a three-piece sheet metal cap at the top of the cantilevers. The drip detail with the hemmed edge that comes back and interlocks with a skirt piece that comes back, and this is the stucco that flushes out with it. It's okay. One of the pieces that we have to show you is the preformed corner of the Cerakladd, which is the only place that you have to. Cerakladd is it's a rain screen system. They actually manufacture all of the clips with their system, and it's all concealed with exception of the side panel edges. The panels come 10 feet tall and 18 inches wide, and it's a tongue and groove system that interlocks together.
Did you say 10 feet long?
10 feet tall.
By 18 inches wide.
And They tongue and groove together. The exception there is when you have an edge that doesn't butt into another tongue, you have to use a piece of solid blocking that we're showing right here, and that ends up being face nailed. And we had the manufacturer bring in a face nailed example here on their corner piece, and it looks pretty clean. I think it's, you know, one of the things to work through. But one of the reasons we chose the cast stripe pattern is because those, you know, flutes in the panel are 3/8 of an inch wide, and they closely match the caulk joint, so we think it's really clean.
It's the only caulk joint, really, on the project, isn't that outside corner?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything else is concealed.
And then since the building's 35 feet tall and the panels come 10 feet, we have to join them vertically. And so we've developed two ways to do that. One is just a really simple Z-flash with a hemmed edge, and then the other one is the larger reveal with a skirt at the top of it. The Z-flash only exists lining up at the tops or the bottoms of the window. So where we do a head flashing at a window, it just continues into the Z-flash line that wraps around the project. Similarly, at the top and the bottom of those cantilevers that we can go back to, we're using this 2.5-inch reveal in some cases. Really simple. The Anderson window is really clean, and the way that it details and the way that it flushes out, the depth of the nail fin happens to line up exactly with the face of the Cerraclad, so we think it's very clean. The project is heated by PTAC units, so cooled. So what we're proposing is that, which we've done in other projects also, is to use a piece of the perforated metal to integrate it, to still have the factory grill of the PTAC unit behind, but then to introduce a panel in front that's 50% open, per the manufacturer's requirements, that flushes out both with the cladding and with the windows. One of the last details we'll show you is as the modules break, we actually have a 1-foot wide vertical reveal that's a piece of sheet metal with hemmed edges that goes back to the sheathing. That it's not terribly deep, it's 1.5 inches deep, but we do think that, the width of it, and since it's aligned with the step on the top of the building, really does make a nice separation between the modules. And just a final rendering of the overall project. So I think that concludes what we wanted to present.
Okay, who's got some questions?
I have a quick site question. So on the patios, when I was reading the graphic, I thought there were two steps up, but that's a flush condition?
Well, it's actually quite challenging with five-foot breakage. Since we're breaking the project into each of the modules, the floor elevation step. By I think it's 9 or 10 inches. And so when you try to modulate from one patio to the next, you do get a little bit of a step at each of the patios. So that condition will change based on where you are in relationship to the slab elevations. In some cases, you'll be on the high side. Some cases, you'll be on the low side.
Okay. So the patios themselves aren't ADA accessible, but the units are ADA accessible.
Correct. Yeah,
accessible from the unit.
So, and we have
but not out to the sidewalk.
Right.
Each one has accessibility through the main entrance, mm-hmm. which is primary.
Yeah. They actually have all of the, they have an
both
entrance
sides.
Off of Raleigh and the entire back walkway and the entrances to the back of the unit. So they have two accessible entrances there.
We couldn't do all three. We tried, but.
Yeah.
Yes. I just have one question. So can we go back to one of your renderings? Mm-hmm. The cedar in between each of the windows?
Yes.
You talked about, the warmth it brings, which I agree. How do you feel about when that looking gray?
Well, it's a good question, and that's a topic that we've done a lot of wood buildings, a lot of wood cladding, and we've kind of lived with them at different ages. And what we've talked about, they look great when they're first oiled. And then the oil dries out, and it grays, and they go through an ugly duckling stage. I think the gray looks okay. I think the oil looks okay. It's what's in the middle that's mm-hmm. kind of questionable. So usually that's with hardwood. This is with cedar. And so what we're actually thinking with for this project on cedar is to use a pigmented wash on the stain to control that color a little bit more from the beginning, and hopefully it'll last a little longer. So a semi-transparent mm-hmm. wash with a little bit of pigment.
It will go gray.
What's that?
It will go gray,
but I think that we can control that better than with an oil.
I don't disagree, but it will go gray.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how do you feel, Tom?
Our intention is to keep it the color we're showing it here. I mean, we did have this conversation. It is the
other species of cedar, so it does darker, but semi-transparent stain. It's also a three-story building. It's pretty easy to get to these panels. I'd be a lot more concerned if this was on a six-story building where you need apparatus to get out and get to it. We think we can maintain it because it's pretty accessible.
How long are you holding?
This is tended to be a long-term hold for the family. So.
How do you keep the cedar looking like that?
Well, I think you got to oil it every few years, I mean, essentially. I mean, with the semi-transparent stain, it's going to help. I mean, it's for most of the ones that you may be familiar with, they're trying to do a clear on it, and then that, I think, fades a lot quicker and grays a lot quicker, but the semi-transparent stain gets into the wood.
I have a stained house, and I'm trying to figure out how to make it from not doing that.
Semi-transparent stain lasts a lot longer.
Huh? I'd say
it will start to gray.
3 years at the most, you're going to get.
And it's the south facade, too, that's, you know, on the back there. You've only got two floors of it. The rest of this is north-facing, so it won't get beamed as much. But
I mean, with that said, the pigmented, you know, body stains do have much better UV control than the clears do that everyone's been using. So
the buildings around that we see that look terrible,
they're oiled.
They haven't done anything. All of those sightings,
I mean, it's amazing how fast they come back to life after they've been oiled. Okay. I mean, they look fantastic, but it needs to be done every 2 years at most.
It's that intermediate, that's what you're saying.
It's the ugly duckling.
Almost ready to get.
Yeah.
So once it turns gray, it will come back.
Yes.
Well, we've
as long as you go back and do some work.
It's like redoing your deck.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. We've used Tiger Wood, too, on our other project on Raleigh. Is Tiger Wood for that reason, because it holds its color better. But, you know, I've been down the road with eBay, and it does fade.
I guess on the same line, the corner pieces are going to get scratched of this, and you're just... It looks like a very durable material, but the finish itself is...
So Cerakled comes with two finish options. You can paint it. It's not the one that we intend to use. We can buy the exact color of the finish that we want to use, but this is actually the ceramic finish. The ceramic finish has a 20-year warranty on it. And, you know, inevitably it may have graffiti on it or scratches, and so you can buy the paint to cover that up, but... That ceramic finish is, you know, as advertised, it's pretty bulletproof.
I would just see that, you know, there's some corners that are going to get scratched.
Yeah, and most of the corners are set back off the street, so you're not right on a hard edge. But, you know, there are, you know, even just during construction, it may get nicked, and we will have touch-up paint for that.
Okay.
But one of the things we liked about it is it has an enamel baked-on finish that's more durable than a field paint. And then, I don't know if Alan pointed out, but the entryways, that's all aluminum storefront in there and stucco. So that's... It's a kind of a different system in the center there. That's where you're going to be more abrasive and a little bit more durable.
And this, what is that again?
The white, all the white stucco, right?
The white is stucco.
Yeah.
All the white stucco, and then the other component is the trash enclosures, the utility rooms, the water rooms, and the thought has been to do those in stucco, but
trash enclosure.
Try to match the trash
enclosures.
Not the trash enclosure, but the pieces that are underneath.
Underneath little boxes for the utilities.
It'll be the color of the Cerakled will be stucco.
Right.
So I don't want you guys to have to give away any trade secrets, but how did you get away with the one stair serving third level?
Well, there's this very specific code path Alan could speak to.
That's a very long answer. The short answer is section 1021, which allows 4 units per one exit. And from there, you have to get into... There's a specific travel distance associated with that that's at 50 feet, I believe. And so our travel distance stops at our unit doors. And our corridors are not corridors. They're exit enclosures. So we've had to bump up the fire rating on those. It's 1 hour instead of 20 minutes, and the doors are 60 minutes. So essentially that whole corridor is an oversized stair landing.
Right. And egress.
Yeah. And there's 5 appeals on it. Yeah,
five appeals.
Okay, that's
the
what I was
code wondering. Got a lot more complicated. We did something, when I was with TCR, we did some walk-ups like this behind Tupelo Alley. If you've been over there, there's some, they don't look like this, but they're similar in plan. And that was a much easier code path, and it's changed a lot since then. So Alan's really had to work to get this one done.
ICC doesn't think any appeals are necessary. City of Portland, there's 5 appeals.
Well, congratulations. I think that's a huge victory.
Yeah, if you get them. I should say when you get them, right. Yeah. Right.
And does that limit you to the three stories?
It does limit you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
right.
You couldn't even mezzanine either. You're
totally
kind of tapped out.
It's by occupancy type. R2 is limited to three stories.
Okay. So my next question was the FAR target.
Yeah.
And as a developer, deciding not to max out your FAR. And that as a model for affordability, seems like there was a nice match there.
Yeah, there was a balance there. I mean, like I said, we were trying to target a little bit more of a price point. If you start getting denser and you go up to four stories and you get an elevator and corridor and podium and underground parking, you know, parking was a big part of it. We didn't want to do an unparked building here. You know,
that
parks well.
Oh, that's what I
40 units question. With 35 stalls. I know people are doing unparked buildings. I think it's a bad idea.
Right.
And certainly the neighborhood has concerns about it. And as Conway develops, you know, you need to be able to provide parking for your residents. So,
same question as Dave. It's a 3-to-1, and you're less than 1 to 1.5 FAR right now. At a 26,000 square foot site?
26,000 square foot.
26,000, yeah. And each building's 21,000, so yep. It's 42,000 square feet if you include it's actually considered structured parking that's underneath the building.
Oh, because you're one.
We're 1.6, 1.7 in that range.
Yeah. Okay. And then the parking is almost it's like almost one per
it's like
unit.
0.871.
Yeah,
right. So, it kind of worked out that way.
So the when I look at those numbers, I think it's kind of suburban, in terms of you know kind of a building type. I know there's a balance here of trying to provide a housing type, but at what cost to kind of other land uses, you know, pushing out that density ever farther, ever farther, ever farther. Yeah. I know this one project won't push the urban growth boundary, but.
And
projects.
I think there's an appropriate yeah. locations for those kind. I think, again, it's part of the strategy of trying right. to provide a little bit better price point for right. something that's non-subsidized here.
Sure.
And there is a
sure.
balance there. We did approach Conway originally about this with trying to do more of a workforce product. They were attracted to a, you know, a more diverse housing options for their employees and others. So there was, you know, they worked with us a little bit on the land value, which, mm-hmm. you know, helps. But, you know, you start to get to that threshold and you pretty soon get into the higher density and you get right back into the very top shelf rents that everybody else is doing on the other district. So, and we also felt that, you know, this kind of being an edge site right now, 40 units felt pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, when you start bringing
site,
all the 150 units there.
On the other southeast corner of that block, isn't there a seven-story apartment building?
There's
that's
a
the Miles Standish.
Building.
Huh?
The Miles Standish building.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there's a 20 Pettigrew. There's one up there that's right. like 85 units or so.
And there's a couple newer buildings that are pretty yeah. tall along.
It's a real yeah. mixture. I mean, they're,
yeah.
They're two and a half. They're really two-story buildings across the street with a raised basement.
Sure.
Adjacent to this.
Right, and a lot of that mixture has to do with holdovers from, you know, when it was very low density. And
yes.
So the question is, why not hold on to those old parts but the new stuff be more dense instead of.
But I think this is more dense than the existing parts that are there. I mean, it is transitional in that way. I mean, there are some smaller 2 and 1 story buildings in there as
right.
we're reaching the stair. Rather than yeah. putting the big building slammed up right next to it, I think it stair steps up to
sure.
the Conway District in a similar way that the projects on the other side on 23rd are.
Right.
They're in the base zone, 45-foot height. We're 45-foot heighter anyway, so
right.
all we really do is one more story anyhow.
Right.
So you're not going
right.
to get that much more density. And that would throw us into a podium building, elevators,
mm-hmm.
the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
This pushes like 5 as far as you can push it. So we've avoided having the rated walls in the podium.
Right.
You know, when we anticipate 5 and 6 story buildings in the Conway plant.
Well, and I would think that site to the south is not as long lived. Your neighbor to the south? It's 2 warehouse buildings. I don't know how.
Well, there's one that I've met with them. They've been in business for 38 years
yeah,
there.
Okay.
So they weren't planning on going anywhere.
Sure.
24 hours a day, 5
yep.
days a week.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you got Lucky Lab there, right?
And Lucky Lab, yeah. which, you know,
that might last.
It'll be there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary owns that building there. So,
right.
You know, there is that neighborhood fabric that's in the district, which has been the discussion, you know, with this Conway, as you guys know, that, you know, it is dense for that neighborhood, and there are, I think, appropriate places for transitional buildings in between.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then give way to somebody else if you have questions.
No, we're going to give you latitude because this is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Right, Dave, you have any?
It's actually for Dave. Is there with the setback? I mean, it seems like a great application. You're able to double the amount of. I mean, the parking issue, Dave, is sort of. I mean, neighborhoods are starting to react to
mm-hmm.
the kind of blanket
mm-hmm.
you don't need any parking if you're on a bus line.
Right.
We're actually seeing multiple, in some places, like projects start to share parking lots. So if like the neighbor develops more densely, they end up buying spots out of the neighbors.
Well, and the like whole division corridor.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Right.
So,
right.
But Dave, I'm just asking, with the 2'6" setback instead of 5 feet, right?
Two feet instead of five.
Mm-hmm. Is there, when that gets, if ever that gets developed, right, the neighbor, is there some kind of, I mean, what's the land use, like, are we putting ourselves in an awkward position there, having granted a 2-foot buffer instead of the, what's required by zoning, when that neighbor gets developed, and they're like, well, how come those guys didn't have to?
Well, I think that it's fairly clear to me, I mean, that they're buffering 5 feet against the blank party wall is
existing.
Senseless. Yeah, we can't condition this on what might happen next door.
Well, but isn't that why the zoning code is written, is so that as things are developed, mm-hmm. they anticipate that when your neighbor comes, he's getting...
There's some buffer.
It's a zero lot line. They could build right up back up to that.
And
they have to have a blank wall. They can't have openings right there. I mean, the condition that's here with Lucky Lab is anomalous because it's a non-conforming existing use there where you've got
loading right against the property line.
So would we look at anywhere there's a zero lot line that where there's a landscape buffer required, that doesn't make sense to have the landscape buffer? I mean,
I'm wondering about Mr. Ordinarily design and not historic.
It has come up a few times recently.
Yeah, I think that answer to your question is the standard applies because what we should be looking at is the site, not necessarily the adjacent properties. However, when we looked at this, we looked at the spacing, the amount of perimeter. We kind of looked at the parking lot area as a whole and thought the modification was justified.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that we couldn't ignore the fact that there's existing establishments there, there's existing businesses there, but you won't find that in the findings. So that's something that the commission needs to balance and find out if does this shorter setback equally or better meet the intent of what 5 foot provides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge, and that can be a burden. The curious fact of the matter is, in this situation, this is a north side perimeter, meaning north of an interior property line site. And so green growy things don't typically do well when they don't get a lot of sunlight. So ironically, in the long-term future, if, gosh forbid, the Lucky Lab goes away and a taller building happens, probably going to have a challenge growing anything in that setback anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be screening anything whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So this perimeter is really doing more of the work of being part of the stormwater management system, which I understand is pretty well accommodated on the downside of the site, on the east side, I believe.
It's a combination of swale and drywall.
So that's something that, in our experience, we've evaluated. We recommended approval on balance with other factors in consideration of screening of this parking area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that this commission needs to balance and weigh out.
Can I add one thing? Is at one point we did look at covering the rest of this with CARP, with a structure that went across. And when we got into that, the way the building code looked at it, it was a structure which required a 2-hour wall there. Then we ended up having to kind of block the whole thing off and sprinkle it and the whole thing. And it became a really ugly situation between the building and the Lucky Lab particularly. So pulling stuff away seemed to be a better solution. And
trying to solve a kind of a quirky situation on this property.
This is isn't this very similar to a lot of the ones that we had a whole round of them on just off of Interstate between mm-hmm. the freeway?
It comes up from time to time.
Very similar to this approach. Park under, a couple levels up.
Yeah, so, it's Ludden Gateway. It's a model in Gateway.
The other thing that we considered is that the lots directly to the south are 10,000 square foot lots, and so at least the piece with the manufacturing building on the corner. So when that gets, unless someone can pull off, you know, aggregating these sites together, and they're developing a 10,000 square foot site, they're likely going to do zero lot line on the entire site.
Yeah.
Due to the size of those adjacent sites, if we are to consider what's on separate sites.
Well, they're set up back enough to have openings for units, right?
I think I'm just coming at it.
There'd be their own buffer.
Right. You have to be 20 feet then.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on their percentages of openings.
Yeah, right. Percentage of,
You know, also, the you know, when I talked...
Hold on, just a sec.
So just really quick, as a matter of decorum and process, I want to make sure we're in asking the applicant questions of their application stage, sure there's not anyone in the audience that wants to testify.
Right, we get there. Okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all.
We were headed there.
Okay, thanks.
So any other questions of the... And I had just... I'm just a little concerned about the Cerraclad. I mean... knowing your firm and how diligent you are about materials, you're still dealing with a very difficult material, at least historically. And so to make the leap, you've detailed it, but have you done a full-scale mock-up of it anywhere, or you plan on? I mean,
Well, we will do a full-scale mock-up, but the manufacturer put this together for us.
Mm-hmm. Right. I went over and looked at it. Yeah, yeah. And like you said, the horizontal... joints have historically, I mean, you've got it all kind of mapped out, but it's still kind of, even when you were explaining it, it seemed like you had a couple little, way.
I don't have reservations about it. And it's something we've talked about internally with the selection of the sheet metal contractor and the, you know, the person that's doing the caulk, that, you know, the execution of the sheet metal and the caulking on this building is critical to pulling it off.
Mm-hmm.
And we fully recognize that.
Yeah.
We've been very careful about, again, the stuff myself in the eye here. Just where those occur, they're not all over the place. They're very clean. They're very crisp. They line up with everything. So there's very few pieces where that's going to be visible. We've been able to let the material kind of float through most of the facade.
Yeah,
one of the things we like about it, it has a lot less joints than.
And we've been all over town looking at the Cerraclad buildings that are in town, and you know, we share your concern with what people have done to date, and a lot of it. And on those buildings, does come down to the caulk, and you know, specifically with the white buildings, on the building that I'm thinking of, the caulk has gathered dust and dirt, and the panels, you know, stay brighter white, and so you get, you know, striations of, and the caulk really shows up. On this building, the caulk really is minimized to the corners, and we chose this color specifically because we thought that it would show.
Hide it
the
a little
least.
Bit.
Point you guys to this image too. It's in the packet. It's a project in Hood River, I think.
Yeah,
it's a house, but it's.
I think it's Eagle Creek.
Is that
nice.
The one right on?
Very tight. Is it? And you can kind of get a little feel for kind of the joinery.
What page is that?
It's on page 46.
Oh yeah.
And that's got a lot more complicated conditions than these guys. David.
Yeah. And you guys did that house or?
No, we didn't.
Oh.
No, okay.
Darn.
Just a good example.
I just said yes. yeah, we did it.
I don't think that's
but stylistically, it's used in a similar way as we're doing it.
That's where the retreat is.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the, you know, that continuous band, that flashing is going to come over. It's going to go up and in. And so how good is that flashing? Is it continuous? How does it overlap? At each, you know, I mean, none of that's a continuous material. And so...
they're all. I mean, they're 10-foot long sections, likely that are slipped together. And I completely agree. I mean, we need mock-ups of all of that as part of the construction process. And I agree with you; it's critical.
Yeah. And then all of your HVAC and everything's coming is behind those little screens that you've got.
Yes.
Is there any? Are there any other? Are you venting the? Everything else is. Yeah, all your bathrooms and kitchens and the hallways and
nothing through the perimeter besides the PTEC units.
Yep. Okay, all right.
I have a couple of landscape questions.
Okay.
On the building, every time the color changes, it's a material change as well. And I was just wondering, in the courtyard, it looks like you have one strip of concrete unit pavers, and the rest of it is just two color changes and poured concrete. Did you consider having one of the bands be a paver at one point?
Just we so there's did. A we did.
And it got cost beat out.
It did. We are thrilled.
Lonely paver band in there.
We're actually thrilled to have two colors and have the acid etching left in the budget at this point.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
Not a very big space.
Well, and also then going down to where the barbecue area is, so those look like pretty big. Are those architectural slabs that you're showing there with grass joints, or what's that material?
They would be cast in place. And Steve? What did we talk about putting between them?
Wash river and gravel.
Gravel.
So it's gravel in
gravel.
Between.
Yeah.
Green gravel.
I was looking at the same thing. Is that tree going to be, I mean, is it going to be, how is it going to get water? Is it irrigated in the middle, the oak?
I think we'll irrigate that one, yeah.
Yes.
You'll have to, right?
Yeah.
Because
yes.
It doesn't have enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
That is pavers over the top, and a little bit on the root zone.
All right. I believe.
Right. Yes. There's a strip of pavers that are, you know,
like right along there.
East and west of the strip of tree that will allow it to have, you know, to irrigate it and also to, you know, more control for the roots to
do their thing. That in the parking area. I mean, it's going to get, I think that one of the dilemmas, well, you had mentioned parking, if I can comment, I don't know if I'm out of order here, but car storage is really more kind of what we call it, or than parking, because a lot of residents, you know, there's 30 bike lockers here too. It's very bike friendly. It's a LEED Gold building. But a lot of folks that still want to live downtown and be close and take transit and take the streetcar still have a car that sits there during the week, and just having that stuff stowed away. So we don't envision this space being a very busy, trafficy area. So that area in the center will be used. Just need to have a place to put the cars too.
Does it have to be cars?
Whatever we're going to be driving around.
I'm just thinking, you know, and some people might have 5 bikes.
Yeah, could.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Put a little pod storage unit in there.
Yeah. Park that. You know, I could see, because you can see it.
You know, see what?
That area. And, you know, I could see it morph into a different type of
if we didn't need the parking and we needed more bike parking, you could take a few stalls and do a bike corral.
The new zoning code's more than one bike parking spot per person, so it's going 1.5.
So that doesn't have to happen here? Is that what you just mentioned a new zoning? About
You can include storage in the units, too,
and
some of that. But we have 30 dedicated lockers, plus there's room storage inside the units.
Right. And there's space underneath the building that qualifies as
the... Yeah, there's... Okay. Also, the 30 didn't include these little racks and stuff over here.
Right,
this was just... These are roll-up, real lockers that you can store a nice
bike. So the decals. Okay, I don't think anyone signed up. Have they paged to speak? Okay, so we'll cross that off the list. And any other kind of commentary or questions related to?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, so do we want to go to comment? Okay. Jane, you want to go?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, overall, I'm supportive of the project. I like what you're doing with the facade, and I think the recessed white entries are just a really nice added element to the rest of the composition. And I think what you've done with the porches out in the front is very creative, in that it's semi-transparent but still gives some enclosure to somebody that would be sitting out there. And I think, especially compared to some other projects that we've seen recently, it's just really a nice solution. And just also the way the layering of the plant material works with both the porches and the sidewalks and the courtyard is all really nice. I think that it would be nice if you could upgrade the materials in the courtyard somewhat. I think that it would make it just feel a little more special than the sidewalk and help to draw people in. And I think it would kind of go with what you're doing with the building, and that every time you are making a material change, it has a color change as well. I think that the bike parking in the back is really nice along that walkway, having those individual units for the bike parking. And I think that the way you've extended the courtyard into the and you're using part of the parking lot as an outdoor space is successful overall. So I think it's a good project. Thanks.
Okay. Catherine?
I'm also supportive. I think it's elegant. I got well-done, simplistic moves. I appreciate the time that you've taken to carefully think through how to detail the Cerraclad, and it's, you know, obviously an important conversation that we've had here, and I think it's well done. I really applaud your integration of the artwork and the thoughtfulness of bringing that on through your other projects, Tom. I think that it's a very nice element. So it's well done, and think you guys have done a great job. Thanks.
Dave?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. I think I can say a lot of positive things, but I think everybody's already done that. So great project, and I think it's in my mind, eminently approvable. But there is one element that I'd like a little bit of discussion about, and Jane, in particular, I'd like to hear what you have to say about it, about those front stoops, mm-hmm. and just if that's the right degree of separation at those. I mean, I think typically when you have residential kind of in a dense environment like this that's sort of right at sidewalk level, mm-hmm. there's usually a grade change, which we don't have. And so it's making me want to kind of go one more step or something to provide one kind of higher level of mm-hmm. separation. I'm trying to envision at 3 feet sort of in a 5-foot zone, sort of being out there. And if my only concern is that whole ground floor just gets, you know, shades drawn day one, and it's sort of one of those conditions. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if there isn't something, if it was a little higher or...
You mean the elevation higher? Or the screen.
Of the fence. Okay. I think they're doing just the right thing from an ADA standpoint and all that. It could be something as subtle as the height of the fence, or if there were, and I don't know how it would impact the units. Even if I love the kind of simplicity and clarity of the whole parquet. That everything's in one plane. It's like a lot of stuff in the district. But what it lacks that a lot of the other housing in the district has is a separation at grade. For those, so it's making me think, well, if that's an exception to the sort of archetype of apartments, then is there something that the housing has to do to, like does those doors step back a little bit, or I don't know. I mean, I don't want to complicate it, but at the same time, it does feel a little pinched and a little public.
I would argue, though, that that's not going to make somebody draw their blinds or not, or open their blinds. It's not going to necessarily change the, you know, activity of those residential units on that street. And I think considering if you're going to stick with the notion of leaving them on grade, then I think it's well crafted in what they've done to layer it myself. Hiring, making the fence a little bit higher to me isn't going to make me feel more comfortable about raising or lowering my blinds or the door. Or, maybe you need to interview the people who want to move in and see if they'll keep their blinds up.
I always think if you raise it too high when you sit down in a chair, you feel like you're in a cage. Like, you want to see over it a little bit. And I think the fence is really there to keep people on the sidewalk from coming up right up to your window. It's basically like keeping people getting too close to the building more than it is people that are sitting on the chair, you know, wanting people on the sidewalk not to see them. It's more just keeping people away from the, you know, hands on the window type of thing.
I think the one that's the worst of this worry is on C8.
Is what?
Page C8. So it looks like a lot of them have either landscape or a fence or something between the street and the window. But that one, you definitely could walk. Someone could press their face on the window. Hey, you know what are you doing there? But the rest of them have. They seem like there's something that's separating the public from your little private space.
Which one, Andy? Which one are you looking at?
One on the right.
One on the corner there.
You're talking about like
right by the little umbrella.
By the courtyard?
Both left and right of it?
On the right.
There's a slip of each other.
Yeah, and there's like a sidewalk that goes right up to the window.
Right here?
Yeah. There. But all the other ones have.
No, because that one, you have landscaping in front of the window.
Yeah, so you have landscaping in front of.
Like a tree there.
I think it's very sensitively and beautifully kind of designed, I think, as a piece and an assembly of elements. It's great. And I hear what you're saying, Jane.
That's just like I see exactly what you're saying. And that's the one that if you could do something a little different, I don't know, the one on the left side where you have the way into the area, it goes to some wood instead of to a piece of glass.
Maybe it's just the position of the fence.
Yeah, I think it's just the position of the planting.
Minor.
Minor, super minor.
Yeah. Is that a friendly suggestion?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Just really if people want to see intimate connection to the street out of your window.
Mm-hmm. What they probably do is do the
the blinds
up, down,
from the bottom.
Blind. Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah, from down up blinds, yeah.
I mean, I think in particular it's where it's, like on C7 even, like that's another view of that, where it's so close to the front door, you know, just in terms of, you know, just the where that space is. Right now the tree is sort of helping provide that screen, right? So it's sort of how effective will that end up being?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, we do a lot of affordable housing, and this is sort of always the size of those little patio elements.
Yeah.
Being. And maybe I'm just used to it from doing those projects that I've never really questioned the size of it.
Yep.
It just seems like that's sort of the allowable amount of space that people generally get. It'd be nice if it was bigger and there was more separation, but that just rarely seems to be the case.
Okay.
And it seems like the curb on like C6 on the left side, the curb that encloses the planter just gives a little bit more feel of separation. It's not giving you, it's giving you elevation, but not ground floor elevation.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
You want to
see this curb?
Oh,
on the plant. I got it.
Planter.
Why don't you make your comments and then.
Okay,
yeah,
so
in terms of, you know, what, how
and,
you feel
and
about
David, to your concern, I mean, to your concerns about the Cerro-Clad, I do think I've got some experience having, you know, like really investigated this and arrived at some of the same, you know, conclude, like this is a really good, if you're going to use this stuff, I think they're doing a really good job at doing the best you could with it in terms of getting all the vertical joints to be, you know, using the vertical pattern instead of horizontal, where you're not going to end up with all these butt joints across the face, and also using the, you know, really striking the kind of making something out of the joint where they're meeting and detailing it. So I mean, I think, and you employing the corner condition, I think if you look at that house project, they're actually much more complicated.
Yeah.
Conditions on there, and they've greatly simplified its use here, even to the corner where it wraps back into the white and stucco. So.
But even in that one photo, you can see that horizontal flashing is just kind of migrating.
It is 22 gauge, I think, is what's
maybe that's
a
using there. Your gauge would be.
That's what I think I saw. Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't go look at that project, but we are using 22 gauge, which
is pretty stout.
It's about as stout as you can do with that small of a break.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually feel quite good about that. That's my
only comments. Okay. All right. You've got those wall setbacks with a little bit of roof. Is that roof draining over the Cerro-Clad, or is it taking?
It is draining over.
Okay. That might be a concern over time.
Yeah, it's 18 inches. And there's a kick on it.
Okay. Andy?
I think we've
beat it to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm
this is your last.
Supportive
this is
of
your
it,
swan song, man. Say something.
Best project ever.
Yeah.
You could say something like that.
I think I was done 609 hours ago.
Yeah. Your time has expired. All right.
I think it. I like the color. How the black really offsets the white. The wood tones and the white is I like that. That's really pop out even more. And obviously the green trees background. It's a very northwest feeling outdoor. It kind of has a nice natural feel of what I'd see out of nature, rocks, trees, wood. I like it. It's really good. There you go.
Is that it? Okay. All right, everyone, so it's my turn. All right. So I've been just struggling with the two aspects of this project ever since I saw it. And the part of the architecture, I think, is excellent. I wish it were in Gateway, because the other part I'm struggling with is the density. And this could be a great model for Gateway. I mean, this is a wonderful project from that sense. The material selection, the massing, the precedent you've taken from in the Northwest, all of those are just great moves. I mean, it's a great story. It's got integrity. The units are really interesting. You know, navigating the code issues, all of that makes it a great building. The the problem I have with it is the density and the parking ratio, and both of those are issues that are, I mean, we're going to see that our next session big time, you know, with a 400-unit high-rise with no parking, you know. And so this is small potatoes compared to that, but it's an issue that, and the other issue is geography. It's right next to what we just approved earlier, which is a master plan for a minimum density of 3-to-1 spread out over a little more geography. But the issue there is surface parking within that new master plan, which we might see, I don't know, in the coming weeks. And so this being so close to that sets up a lot of issues that are counter to that big master plan that we just approved. And so timing-wise, unfortunately, you're right after that in some ways. But, I'm not going to necessarily vote against this project, but I just think it's a cautionary project in a lot of ways for us to look at when the Conway sites start coming in, and in particular when the FAR starts to dwindle, you know, and we're left with a couple of sites that might be 1.5 FAR. That's why when we were talking about the master plan is a minimum FAR per site, because that then distributes it out a little bit more, and you don't get this within that master plan. So I'm willing to kind of look at it in a way that it's going to set a great architectural precedent, but I don't think it sets a great planning precedent, unfortunately. So so I think we just need to, as a commission, be a little more cognizant of what these things represent from a density FAR kind of aspect. So we can discuss after if you want, but that's the end of the comments. Paige, you want to? Oh, someone needs to make a motion, right?
I'll make a motion to accept the staff report as written.
I second.
Okay. Paige?
Okay. David Keltner?
Aye.
Jane Hansen?
Aye.
Heather Schultz?
Aye.
Andrew Jansen, your last vote.
Dun, da, da, da.
Aye.
And David Warren.
Aye. Thank you.